So this is the weekend where Father Conway and I rotate who has the Latin Mass and who has the Spanish Mass. So I'm on for Spanish Mass this afternoon, and I'm not able at this point to preach like I do in English. I need my homily written out line by line and translated. So on my way back from vacation, I sat in my layover and I typed out the homily. I sent it off to get translated. My homily was, it's all about how we try and distract ourselves from perhaps those deeper desires that are there that St. Paul writes about in our second reading. Then I got onto my flight, and when the jet bridge pulls away, start hearing bang, bang. And I look down the airplane, and there's the stewardess trying to get the boarding door to close and not succeeding. Then the pilot comes out of the cockpit, and it was almost like a cartoon. This giant of a human being comes out of the tiny airplane door and stands up and blocks the whole view of the cockpit. This pilot is enormous, and he slams this door and latches it. But then he sits down and he goes, "We had some trouble getting the door closed, so I'm going to call maintenance," which anybody who's flown knows we're going to be here for a while. I didn't disagree with the call for maintenance. I wanted to make sure the door was closed as much as anybody else. But I did the exact thing that I had written about in my homily. I distracted myself. I put in my earbuds, turned on a podcast, and went, "Well, I'm going to take a nap." That's a pretty common thing that we have been trained to do. If something is difficult, if there's something that's uncomfortable, what we reach for is distraction. But this is not going to be just homily where a blast social media or endless scrolling or whatever. We know that that's something that we do. But instead of just looking to modify our behavior, it's really important for us to look at, why do I do this stuff? Right? St. Paul grapples with this at other places in Romans. Why do I do the stuff that I don't want to do? And he comes to a very important reality, and it runs in our other readings as well. This reality of longing, of desire. Desire is an intense thing. And so it's sometimes easier to just stay in the shallows, to stay distracted, to stay in a place that we know isn't just unhelpful or unproductive, but is out and out sinful. So we want to be aware that even as we choose sin, we're looking to satisfy that groaning within ourselves that St. Paul talks about. We're seeking some false good, when really what we desire is the true good. So this can help us in our combating of sin. Jesus is trying to diagnose this in the gospel. Right? What is the reason that maybe we fall away? Did we take on too much at once after a conversion, trying to be strong when we haven't had time to put roots down? Are we allowing worldly anxieties or greed to choke out the life of God within us? He's trying to help the disciples, us, understand why it might be that the fruit of our lives is drying up before it can really produce fruit. But there's something even deeper that I want us to be aware of here, and it's the cosmic reality of what it is that we are made for. Right? St. Paul is talking about all of creation was made subject to futility. Right? Through the fall, through the failure of stewardship of our first parents, all of creation is damaged. We think of it, if we have a kingdom where the king is sinful, disordered, selfish, the whole kingdom suffers. That's what happened with creation. It was entrusted to us and we damaged it. But creation, St. Paul says, is waiting to be set free by the glorious freedom of the children of God. So it is not a hopeless affair that we find ourselves in. Rather, it's something incredible. We aren't just made for heaven as if heaven is some sort of celestial country club where we can go off and never be bothered and just feel really comfortable. Heaven is the being raised up to the dignity that we were made for, which is to be sons and daughters of God through adoption, to share in His divine life, to claim the stewardship that was given to our first parents over all of creation. Not because we are great or have earned it on our own, but because our Father is generous and gives it to us out of love. When we look at the saints, when we hear their stories, we can shrink away. We can shame ourselves and say, I could never do that. They're just better than I am. We know the litany of our own sins. We know our weaknesses, the proclivities that we may have. And so we give in to discouragement, which is sometimes choosing to distract ourselves from the incredible destiny that God has in store for us, if only we will cooperate with Him. The immensity of that call sometimes scares us. Jesus indeed is looking for fruit in our lives. That can scare the daylights out of us because we go, I can't produce it. But it was never ours to have to produce in the first place. Listen to the first reading. The word goes forth from God and does not return to Him until it bears fruit. God is not expecting us to bear fruit on our own. God desires to be joined to us in deep intimacy, to raise us up from within to that fruitfulness, to that reflection of Him that is beyond what we can ask for or imagine. There's a great line from St. Gregory the Great. It's a Christmas homily that he gives. And he says very bluntly, Christian, remember your dignity. Remember your dignity. C.S. Lewis perhaps says it a little bit more vividly. He said, next to the Blessed Sacrament, your neighbor is the holiest thing that you will encounter. Because in eternity, they will either be a horror so frightening that you've scarcely encountered something like it in your worst nightmares, or they will be something so incredible that on this side of eternity, you might be mistaken and bow down and worship. He understood the dignity that is there in being called children of God. And he understood that the longing that we have, that no matter how much money or pleasure or honor that we throw at it, whether through sin or through lesser good things, doesn't go away. It only comes from that willingness to go to God. And so we need the wake-up call to remember our dignity. We need to do the painful thing and be attentive to the longing that's there. We need to, even for a fraction of our day, resist the temptation to pop our earbuds in and take a nap, whatever that might look like, and actually attend to with God that desire that He has put within us to live to the full dignity of being His son or His daughter through adoption. We are not made to stay in the shallows. We are made to bear fruit. And the goodness of God is such that He doesn't stand back and say, you better figure out how to bring me that fruit, but instead gives Himself to us so that all we need to do is patiently, consistently open our hearts and say, come in, and then to wait. The fields don't sprout overnight, and God is patient with us for a lifetime. But that lifetime needs to be one where we are continually aware of the desire that is beneath every other desire, to realize the incredible dignity that God has given us. So as we draw close to Jesus, our adopted brother in baptism, in the Eucharist, may we give him permission to realize the immense desires that our Father has for us, to follow him into the deep, and to not choose to distract ourselves and hide in the shallows, so that we might rejoice in hope beyond hope, at rising to something we didn't dare to ask for or even imagine in our lives.